This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
We're back once again with another This Just In podcast, located on the internet at www.the-means.com, the downloadable radio show that participates in a weekly struggle to make the half hour you spend listening to us worth your time, and not lame as hell like the majority of podcasts out there. On today's podcast, I have a huge announcement. Today marks the third show in a row we have now done without getting lazy and missing a week. We fully realize that this leaves you in a troubling silence for at least one half hour of your work or school week, and we feel guilty. But don't worry, we are here and dedicated, because at this rate, we could just go an entire month without stopping. As for your hosts, I'm Tanner Higgin, podcasting from Los Angeles.
And I'm Chris View, podcasting from Detroit.
And the first topic I really wanted to discuss today, if you bought an issue of The Means so far, or if you check out our blog regularly, you'd probably realize that me and Chris are giant Battlestar Galactica fans, and have been since...
Enormous.
Yeah, and have been since the original miniseries aired. What day did it air? It was this last episode. It was on Friday, January
13th.
Yeah, wow. It was on Friday the 13th, and it was the second episode after the season premiere. And it was really, I guess, it sort of fully realized the premiere, because the season premiere was the setup action for this real premiere episode. And my God, I swear it had to be one of the best hours of television I've ever watched.
Hands down.
And I sat there, and my girlfriend actually fell asleep and missed the episode, now
what?
Has to download it and watch it. And the only way I could describe it to her was that it was like an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
I've never felt such visceral reactions when watching something. I mean, my heart was racing at times. I got real sad at times, and tears were welling up, and the action was intense. I mean, it had every sort of emotion it got to bring out of me, and that is something that TV doesn't do. I mean, it simply doesn't do. Being somebody that's involved in writing, and, you know, I consider myself a fairly good judge of writing, I'm continually amazed by the writing on that show and how absolutely clever, spot on, and just brilliant it is. It is really taking TV to a whole new level. And I really wanted to start off the show just commanding everyone that if you're not watching this show, you need to start. You know, stop watching your garbage West Wing or Scrubs, or whatever the hell else people are watching nowadays and thinks intelligent. And you need to turn on sci-fi as much as it hurts you, because I know you saw the Mansquito commercial too. And start watching Battlestar, because it is going to go down in history as one of the best shows to ever air on television.
I actually watched Mansquito, so unfortunately that applies to me. But the fact is, like, Battlestar Galactica does have the best writing on TV. There's a lot of people, my roommate's a huge fan of Lost, and, you know, I like the show Lost, but I have to say that Battlestar, and please, I want to urge people, like, remove the stigma of not wanting to enjoy a science fiction show, because this show goes beyond just space battles. It does those quite well, don't get me wrong, but when you realize the depth of characterization on that show, and how each character is integral to the makeup of the storyline, you know, they don't squander a character. If the character is non-essential, you don't have to deal with that person. But they've got a cast of, I don't know, like a good cycle of 10 or so people who are just always rock solid. Like this past week, okay, after the first episode, it was a to-be-continued episode, so it was a two-part intro to the season. At the end of the first episode, and I don't want to give anything away, but the order that was given at the end of that episode, you know, before it faded to black, I was literally gripping the couch, and when it ended, I screamed and I pounded it, because I couldn't imagine my life without it for six more days, you know. I couldn't imagine that. And then when I finally saw the episode that aired on the 13th, just last Friday, I realized just how godlike the show was. It was just absolutely impressive. And it sucks because I wish I could be talking to you about what happened, Tanner, right now, because I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but it, like, just that intro, okay, I can say that, that intro where it shows Captain Adama and he's floating through space, and then, you know, it shows him, and like, the just how metaphoric that shot in the water was when he realized what was going on. You know, like, how amazing that was. And those kinds of tie-ins, those types of writing strategies don't work in other shows. They don't even try them, I don't think.
Yeah,
so, Battlestar Galactica is amazing.
The show is becoming extremely poetic in that they're perfectly walking the line between sci-fi and real life, where it's not like Star Trek, where everything is way overboard. When you watch Star Trek, you're watching a sci-fi show. Battlestar still keeps it sort of grounded in the real. You know, there's no lasers and wacky crap like that. It's still grounded in the real. The characters still act really real. There's no aliens in the crew and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then the fact that it's sci-fi, it also gives you that sort of leeway to go into things more fantastical. And that lends it a certain poetic quality that makes it more mystical and interesting. And the way they walk that line, then keep it grounded in real life concerns, you know, like religion. I mean, one of the main themes in that show is religion and the battle over belief and love and that sort of thing, which usually these shows don't tackle. And if they do, it's, you know, it's like what you see on network television, where it's real traditional and you know what to expect. This show, I never know what to expect. And I'm always amazed at the quality of the moments and the quality of the emotions that they can, you know, garner through their writing.
Excuse me.
It's impressive.
But one of the things you just brought up that's probably the thing that attracts me the most to the show is that battle over religion, where you've got you the viewer are to perceive are the good guys. They're very much wrapped up in a polytheistic society that's been destroyed by the Cylons. Created by this society, and the Cylons, though, are monotheistic. They believe in the one God, and really on a religious crusade to show that they're correct, that they're right, they're artificially created, that they're the right ones, you know, they're the ones who need to be taking the universe now. And it was just, it's such a wonderful, I don't know, because the mythology of the polytheistic peoples, you know, the ones that you're, the main characters, there's something really deep about that mythology, and it's very Greek-like, but it works. There, you know, I don't know. It was amazing. I just love the writing on that show.
And you got to give. I mean, what I'm really starting to realize that separates this show from others. And I'm sort of taking Battlestar against network TV. I mean, obviously HBO's got amazing quality shows, and they've been doing that. But they're working on a whole different level. You know, HBO's got a whole different budget, a whole different set of rules, but. You know, Battlestar's unique in that it's on just sort of basic cable. And I'm seeing what's really different about Battlestar is the quality of the acting, and because the acting is so top-notch, you end up really liking and being interested in every single character on the show. There's not a character that I could say that I'm really uninterested in or whose storyline I could care less about, which has never been the case for me. Even on, you know, like classic shows like The Sopranos, there's been characters on The Sopranos where I'm just like, enough of this, I don't care. But on Battlestar, I want to see everybody's storyline.
Yeah. Well, let's just throw it down, though. Which storyline is your favorite? Was it, as of last week, was it the story between Adama and the Admiral? Was it the story of Starbuck, you know, being put onto the Admiral's ship? Was it? I'll tell you mine right off the bat. I love the story of Hilo and the Chief and how they had to fight for. I can't think of her name, but Grace Park's character. I think that's who played. But you know, she was a Cylon, they were basically putting the brig on the Admiral's ship because both of them are in love with her. Or well, the Chief was in love with her real person when she was a human, and. Hilo, you know, is in love with her because she's carrying his baby, even though she's a Cylon. I mean, that's my favorite story. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What's your favorite storyline?
Yeah, I want on the subject of that Hilo, and the Chief thing. That was one of the best moments, and I think, in this last episode, where Hilo and the Chief meet up with Sharon again, and Hilo is talking to Sharon, because
yes.
if you don't know that, there's multiple versions of each Cylon. So the Hilo and the Chief were each in love with two different versions of the same Cylon. So essentially, the one that's still alive is Hilo's, basically, his girlfriend, even though the Chief was in love, essentially, with the same person. But what was awesome was that Hilo was talking to Sharon, and then they set up the shot, so the Chief was in the background, and the way he acted that scene, where you could tell that he was struggling with his emotions for his Sharon, but then realizing that, you know, that he had to just give it up. And the way that guy acted that scene
he had to let go.
I mean, that just encapsulates what is great about Battlestar in comparison to other shows. Because there's subtle... Yeah.
And the guy who plays the Chief is badass.
Yeah. But, I mean, my favorite storyline's got to be the Doctor. Because that guy is just unbelievable.
Oh, God, I forgot about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's just unbelievable. I mean, every episode, I'm amazed with how much better that storyline keeps getting. And with this last episode, it got taken to a whole other level, which, you know, now we're waiting to see where that goes.
But. Pretty much the borderline treason if he's found out for what happened. I wish I could tell people about what the hell happened.
I know, that's exactly why we're doing this podcast, because we have to inform everyone to start watching this damn show. Because I know Time Magazine named it the best show of the year of 2005, but I still get the impression that a lot of people aren't watching it, you know?
Yeah. So, but, anyway, I don't know. Do you want to keep talking about it? Because I really want to, like, I want to divulge so much.
No, well, I guess we'll have to start a separate podcast where we just talk about Battlestar.
We could set up a Battlestar Galactica podcast, just nerd it up. It'd be amazing. I went and saw this movie finally. And let me just say, I was so happy I went and saw this, because it's been out, I think, for maybe a month or so, at least in theaters around here. Maybe less than that.
No, it was. That movie got released months ago. I think they re-released it, probably.
Yeah, I finally got around to seeing it. And, of course, I meant to see it anyway, because Noah Baumbach is the director, and he's Wes Anderson's new crony. You know, Owen Wilson's out, Noah Baumbach's in.
Yeah,
and
he co-wrote Life Aquatic, yeah.
Yep, and I love The Life Aquatic, so I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this guy a chance. Not to mention, if you go to Metacritic, The Squid and the Whale got some of the best reviews of the year, and I think it's been nominated in a few awards. I don't know if it's at the Golden Globes, but it's been nominated for getting a lot of nods for his performance, and rightfully so. I just wanted to say, very briefly, because I don't, you know, it's a short film, an hour and 20 minutes, very effortless to go see it, but when you come out of the theater, you will definitely have two feelings. You'll feel on one hand, like, I came out and I was just so pleased with what I had seen, but at the same time, I felt very taxed by it, because so much happened with so little effort in the film, and that's testament to not just Jeff Daniels, but the rest of the cast. They got two good kids in the film. But there's also some aspects that were very Wes Anderson-like, and they worked. For instance, it featured 70s rock songs, and very prominently it had the song Hey You from Pink Floyd's album The Wall, and it was used a lot in the film, but it worked. There was something, because I'm not a very big Pink Floyd fan, but that song in particular is just, it was godlike in its use in the film. Also, one of the other things that's amazing, Bob Yeoman he was the DP for the film, so the cinematography in the movie, it's got that Royal Tenenbaum's New Yorkish feel to it, which was awesome. But I have to say, one of the breakthrough roles in the film for me was Billy Baldwin, who played a tennis coach who ends up dating the Jeff Daniels' now ex-wife in the film. He starts dating her, and his relationship between one of Jeff Daniels' kids, because what happens, in short, I forgot to even mention this, but in short, what happens is the film is the story of Jeff Daniels and his wife, and I can't think of her name. I'm not going to IMDb it today. I can't do it. And and his wife, and they split up. And so one son is attached to Jeff Daniels. And at first, you're really like, you can see why. And then later in the film, you start to question Jeff Daniels' playing of... He preys on the feelings of his son so that his son will love, so that he won't lose his son. Which is both tragic, yet, like, understandable when you're watching it. Then there's the other story of the younger son who is going with the mother, and who doesn't like Jeff Daniels' character. And so it's just like... But there's so much... I don't know. there's so much turmoil and grief and angst and everything. I don't know, the film, for me, I know last week I said that Me and You and Everyone We Know is my favorite film, but I think The Squid and the Whale just beat it. Honestly, I think it did. Both are on the same wavelength in terms of the quirkiness in some of the parts, but Squid and the Whale was definitely amazing. So.
But, I mean, are you prepared to make the profound statement and be quoted on it that Billy Baldwin's performance in this movie was better than his performance as Zeke Hawkins in Sliver?
I, you know, honestly, wasn't he in a film with Cindy Crawford, too?
Oh, yeah. What was that?
Oh, I'm looking. IMDb-ing it.
No, I got him up on IMDb, but I can't even remember what movie it was. I can picture the movie.
I'll remember it when I see it.
Yeah, Fair Game.
Yes, that's it. If you remember, it was like, I remember someone had a tether on them, and then Crawford was trying to look all hot and bothered by everything. But testament to how bad this film is it's got a 3.9 out of 10 on IMDb.
No, testament to how bad it is, click on the director, Andrew Sipes, and look at his body of work.
He did Street Justice? That was my favorite episode, The Group.
This Andrew Sipes that directed Fair Game starring Billy Baldwin and Cindy Crawford, his only movie ended up being Fair Game.
Well, here's the, for anyone who wants to know the plot summary for Fair Game, here it is. Max Kirkpatrick is an excellent cop who takes it to himself. You know what? I'm not reading the plot summary. On IMDb, do not know how to write. That's why I hate
takes
this
it
BS
to himself.
With these idiot people. Yeah, he doesn't take it. All right, here's the tagline, all right, because they can't fuck this up. He's a cop on the edge. She's a woman with a dangerous secret. And now they're both fair game.
Because on mine it just ends with, and now they're both ..
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah.
There's an ellipsis, but yeah, you gotta assume the silent fair game.
It's amazing how Billy Baldwin's career, I mean, he hasn't done much. He's been struggling his entire career.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he ever wanted to be the good Baldwin. You know, I think it's really Stephen Baldwin who's been trying to usurp Alec. But Billy, I think Billy knows his place among the Baldwins. He's kind of, you know, the greasy, sweaty, skinny one. And then it's really between Alec and Stephen as far as the Baldwin brothers go.
Yeah, I've been
Go see Squid and the Whale. It's amazing.
I've been wanting to see that movie for sure. And I just checked the release dates, and it was shown at Sundance in January, so it's been around since at least January. I think people are too busy going to see, all the hit movies out lately.
Yeah, because there's so damn many great films to go see at the theater. I'm still pissed about it. I don't want to get into it, but I hate all the movies that are out pretty much right now.
We've already ranted on that one.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, though? I've never heard of this guy, but they were talking about him on the PC Gamer podcast, and his name is Uwe Boll.
You know who Uwe Boll is? He's directed some of the worst films that, like, possible. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but I've always known it as Uwe Boll.
It's Uwe. It's Uwe.
He does all of the video game to screen films.
Yeah,
absolutely horrible director.
Yeah, and I guess he's like the bane of the video gaming industry because he somehow acquires these properties and then just runs them into the ground with bad movies. He's done House of the Dead, Alone in the Dark, the recent Blood Rain, and he's
doing your Far Cry coming up.
Yeah, he's signed up for Far Cry, Postal, Dungeon Siege.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I'd never heard of him, but I guess he's just a horrible person that he just runs these franchises in the ground. And what happened with the Blood Rain movie that just came out, I bet most of our listeners don't even know it came out. But it came out, and it made like $1 million. And then they screwed up, and they sent the prints of the movie out to like 5,000 more theaters than they were intending.
Uh-huh.
And they had to pay for that. So
oh
the
my
movie,
God.
And that cost like $25 million.
Wow.
So the movie is like in the hole huge.
Wow. Yeah, the DB, the budget was $25 million. The opening weekend, it made 1.5. The gross so far, 1.5.
Plus the debt they're going to incur from sending out too many prints.
Oh my god.
What? Yes. So I just had to add that because I found that so funny. That's credit of the PC Gamer podcast, which you can find it, I'm sure, at PCGamer.com.
just give Blood Rain some credit, though. Look at this stellar cast it has, though. Okay, it's got Ben Kingsley. Okay.
No, it does?
It has Michael Madsen.
What?
It has Billy Zane. It has Meatloaf. And then it also has, well, Michelle Rodriguez, but I hate her. I hate Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And I'm glad she's going to jail.
Me too.
She does. So anyway, but yeah, look at that star-studded cast. On IMDb, it got a 2.4 out of 10. That's got to be one of the lowest. We just got back, well, we got into the game, me for the first time, you for a second time, which is World of Warcraft. It's a game that I resisted in the beginning. I mean, when this came out approximately 1 year ago, it had been released, a little over a year ago, and you and I both adamantly denied this game its rights as a good game because we were so much into EQ2, and with EQ2 came the Train of Disillusion, and we realized quickly around level 20 that we could no longer sustain any efforts in keeping our characters up because the storyline in that game became mindless and it was drivel and it was such a tedious game anymore that we just had to stop.
Yeah.
So anyway, after a year, I rested my MMORPG soul and I've decided to come back, and this time I chose World of Warcraft, and I've got to say it's provoking it a lot. But again, my worst suspicions have come true. It is very simple, and it's a little too simple. And I'm afraid that at some point I'm going to get sick of how simple it is. Because there's really no, there's no consequences for a lot of my actions. So I'm getting a little worried, but at the same time I will say I'm having a blast playing it. I have liked, I'm only a level 13 right now. But I like it. I do like it a lot. What are your thoughts on it so far, now that you've got a new character started?
When I first signed up, it was just in its infancy. I mean, it had gotten great reviews, and a lot of people had been playing it, but it hadn't turned into the cultural phenomenon it has turned into. And now that it is a cultural phenomenon, I feel it's almost necessary, as somebody who likes to study games, that I play this game at least, you know, a decent amount of time, because I don't know if a lot of people realize out there what a phenomenon this game is, but it's got 5 million paying customers, which shatters any previous estimations of what a massively multiplayer online RPG could ever accomplish. No one ever imagined that there would be millions of subscribers to one this early on in their life cycle. And I guess the makeup of the game is nearly 50% female, too, which is another staggering statistic a lot of people don't realize. So I really wanted to get in the game just because I want to figure out what it is about the game that is drawing players in, and I think you're hitting it right on that it's easier. It's a hell of a lot easier than the first EverQuest, and it's substantially easier than the second EverQuest. And I think that's the key to its success here, is that it's super accessible. You know, I could say almost anybody, even somebody with limited amount of time playing games, could jump in this game. Wouldn't you say that's safe to say?
Oh, God, yeah. You need little, if any, experience with MMORPGs. I mean, I know a friend of mine who actually lent me her play it. She started playing, and she had no experience with any sort of game, didn't even know what EverQuest was, and she was able to get her character up to, like, level 45 before she basically had to quit. But
why did she quit, though? I mean, was it time or difficulty?
It was time constraints because of life events, not necessarily because of the game itself. Yeah. It was just lack of time to continue her character. But I have a friend. Well, you know him. You know Brian Hartman. He's been playing the game religiously since its inception, and he still plays to this day. He's still playing it. Mm-hmm. I think in the end, it's going to come down to, because when you look at both games, because EQ2, I don't know what happened to that game, and I honestly don't know where it's gone since we've left, because we tried suggesting things for that game. We wrote on the boards. We tried to make it so that the game would be more fun. And it's sad because the community of people is very hostile towards suggestions. And that was upsetting to me because I'm open to ideas. But apparently people in that game don't like questing. They just like the XP grind. Mm-hmm. And that's upsetting to me because all I care about is adventuring and running around to unique locations and having an interesting storyline that I feel a part of. And World of Warcraft somewhat has that. And I will say that, like, I like the landscapes, I like the different architecture and and the different, you know, you can run through a tunnel, and on one end of the tunnel it's snow-capped mountains, and on the next end you're in a lush forest, and I like that. Whereas EQ2 was very pastel-colored, it didn't have much, but see, now EQ2 for me, what it had for me was the player classes were very intricate, and it was definitely for more advanced gamers. It would be hard for a novice gamer to get into EQ2, and maybe that was one of its first faults.
Yeah, but definitely.
But at the same time, I look at how simple my character in Warcraft is. I'm playing a mage, and I have three spells, and I just hit the buttons. Whereas with EQ2, they had what were called heroic opportunities, and those heroic opportunities would allow you to, within a group, it made you feel important, because you would cast your, you know, you would throw the dice, essentially, and based on that, the next guy would pick up with what you were able to do, and after a while, you'd start a chain where each class within your group could progress this heroic opportunity to its ultimate outcome, which was a major hit to the NPC, the bad guy, and it made for fun grouping, because then you could try and link up with other people and see what heroic opportunities you could create, what kind of change you would make. Whereas in, you know, World of Warcraft, it's basically your flat out classes. You know, I'm a mage, I deal damage and try not to, you know, get a beast on me. You know, I try not to do too much so that I get killed. You're playing a warlock, you just sit in the back, send your pet up front, and then do damage over time spells. You know, it's very, you know, the basics. So,
yeah, I mean, when you compare the two, because obviously World of Warcraft beat out EverQuest 2, and really the only major distinguishing differences that I can account for that would lend one to believe why World of Warcraft is so successful is first of all the easiness, and secondly that it immerses you more in a world than EverQuest 2 did. I mean, EverQuest 2 started everybody out in one of two locations, and everyone basically progressed the same way. In World of Warcraft, you have a whole huge world. Everyone starts based on their race in different parts of the world, and you've got a ton to explore. And I think that really is key to the success, because it makes you feel immersed in a new type of world. But conversely, I also think that both games have the fault that the experience is still the same sort of experience that we've had throughout all MMORPGs, where you either kill beasts or do really simple quests. There's still no dynamic questing, which is my overall complaint with all these games. And you know, that huge letter I wrote to the EverQuest 2 people, you know, this was involved in that. And if you Google my name, Tanner Hagen EverQuest, on Google, you'll see the huge essay I wrote that had no response other than negative response. But basically, I want to give a call to people who are making these games to make dynamic quests, something that's tailored to our experience, and that makes it different. It makes it unique for each player, you know. And use the tools that games like Second Life, which aren't very popular, but they have, you know, a tool set where people can create the content to maybe help out with that burden, and have the players create the content for other players, you know.
Right. And I think you bring up a good point, because obviously what we're saying is that if you took the best of Warcraft and the best of EQ2, it would probably make an ultimate game for us. But at the same time, you know, they're never going to combine forces, and in fact, there's so many different factions in the MMORPG business. And so either one of two things has to happen. The first being, we just need to have a truce. We need to have Sigil, and we need to have Sony, and we need to have, you know, we need to have whoever does, I can't even remember who does Warcraft now.
Blizzard.
We need to have, we need to have all these guys come together and say, you know what, man, we could all pool our resources, make a dynamic world that's enormous, absolutely enormous. We could corner the market, make a monopoly out of this, but get all 5 million WoW subscribers, get all 5 EQ2 subscribers, and get any future subscribers to these shit-ass games that MMORPG people put out. Okay, put them all together. We can all enjoy one world together. I think it would be the biggest breakthrough ever. That's option one. Option two is let Tanner and I design a game, for fuck's sake, man. Because honestly, we have all the ideas for a game. Tanner, name one element you want in this this game that we're hypothetically creating.
I feel like I want my character to be recognized. You know, I feel when I play World of Warcraft, I'm just one of a few masses, but I want to be able to accomplish quests and do things in the game world that affect the game world, and that I can see. Like, I want to get in a battle that that you know, crushes a tree that falls over a river and suddenly a new bridge is created or something like that, and I could say, wow, I did that. Or I want to I want to walk through the game world and have people react to me, you know, townspeople, and you know, exclaim deeds I did. They claimed they were going to do this in EverQuest 2, but it never really it happened. That's what I want.
Yeah, and I want, on a similar level, just as one of the other things that I would put in the game, I do want to have where, and this goes against the whole, see, this is, it would be hard to implement, but in my head it works, so bear with me. You would have it where you could have a level one character, you know, accidentally slay something that's so giant, so enormous, it could, so that you can have the smallest, just like Frodo Baggins, man, have the smallest creature do a significant action. People in the world to be like, holy shit, this thing actually, you know, this person actually redefined the landscape. And I see it more on a grand scale than just a tree falling over, but the tree falling over example is perfect, because on the smallest scale, that should be able to happen. But even on a larger scale, I want an ever-evolving history. I want an ever-evolving world where my character makes a difference on every level of the world. I want it to where the designers of the game have an idea of how it's going to start, but even they don't know what's going to happen in the end. Even they don't know. You know, they might have to, due to actions of the world, someone out of the gate might slay a dragon that they created that they thought would be, it would be impossible for anyone to do it, and this level 5 character stumbles into a cave, accidentally triggers a boulder to fall on it, the beast dies, and then this person, maybe they don't, you know, it would be impossible to say that you would reward that character with experience that would make him suddenly a level 60. Instead, what he would get, though, is that notoriety, that per se, holy shit, Pilby just slayed the dragon, and it was haphazardly, but now what do we do? The world is different without this dragon. So the designers would always be evolving with the storyline. And this is something that was kind of promised in that that game Horizons, which I think is already released, and I don't think anybody played that
game. No one
and,
did.
Yeah, and but it was supposed to be a world where, you know, they were talking... I remember when it was first coming out, they had been talking about doing, like, this tribe of people who would be controlled by GMs, who would always be, like, somehow toiling in the world's events, so that... that's another thing. I want, like, cities... Like, I want to be going to a city. Let's say you go to Azeroth or some major city. I want it to be sacked. I want it gone. At some point, I want to be running to Azeroth and see smoke in the distance, be like, holy shit, what's happening in Azeroth? And then come to find out it was just destroyed by this mysterious race of people, and no one who was there survived. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see that.
Yeah, and, you know, another huge thing is that we're all playing these games because we want to be badasses. We want to affect the world. We want to feel like we're amazing. We want the hot gear and all that stuff. And the way these games are set up right now is they're being tailored to make super nerds the badasses, the people who can put in hours and hours and hours. I mean, I have an equally pathetic life as a super nerd. I mean, we're equally pathetic, but the problem is I just don't have as much time to put in as the super nerd. Yeah. So why can't I feel like a badass too? You know, just because I can only put in, you know, a few hours a week, at least give me something, you know, give me a huge sword or something that I just come across. You know, it shouldn't always come down to who can put the most time in. I don't want to hear that argument that it's always got to be about who puts the most effort in. It should be equal. Everyone should have equal amounts of fun in the game.
And that brings up another great point with what our ultimate MMORPG would be. It would be so accessible that casual gamer would be on par with the hardcore gamer. And that makes it so that you can play a game at your leisure, and it introduces it to where, like, you can play leisurely, and then all of a sudden be like, you know what, today I'm going to grind it out, and get have the same rewarding feeling at the end of the experience. If I log on for an hour, I should be able to come away from that hour and be like, hell yeah, that was awesome. I feel like I accomplished something. I received, you know, loot that was, you know, that's going to accentuate my look. I received a quest that I'm really looking forward to doing later, or I finished a quest that was really intense but only took me an hour to do, and I didn't need to... Well, I'll get down to groups in a second. So that's what I'm... You know, I'm looking for that kind of dynamic where you can be casual, you can be leisurely, or you can be hardcore, and nobody's ostracized.
Yeah, and the people always argue that, well, you know, if there isn't any difference between somebody who plays hard and someone who doesn't, then, you know, what's the benefit of playing hard? The benefit is you're having more fun because you're playing more often. I don't understand that argument. I really don't. It doesn't make sense
to me. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But really quickly, before we end this, it does bring up the idea of grouping, because that's been a huge problem for me, because I love flying solo in real life and fake. I love flying solo a lot of times, and these games, at some point, they try to make it so that like you're forced to group, and I don't like being forced to group. I would almost like it if they had just as many, like for higher levels or to get experience or whatever, they had just as many options with group tasks as they did, or with solo tasks as they do with group tasks, to where even like I could say, you know what, tonight I'm going to choose a solo type quest, and then, you know, maybe another night if you're online when I'm on two-man type, you know, quest, and then you and I could just team up and do it with not ease, but, you know, with relatively low difficulty, to where, you know, maybe we'll die. Maybe it'll take us two or three times storming this cavern or whatever. But we'll never once say to ourselves, this is not fun, because EQ2 did that to us, and it just made it so it was impossible to play anymore.
Yeah, and I guess
they need to make it, like, yeah, go ahead.
I guess we should announce that we're on the Akama server, which is AKAMA on World of Warcraft.
Yep. We're Alliance.
Why not? And there's the Horde, I guess, who we're against, but we're the Alliance. So you got to create an Alliance character if you want to play with us. And Chris's character name is Pilby, which is P-I-L-B-Y.
Yep. And he's a badass. He doesn't take any shit. Let me just dispel any rumors about Pilby. He doesn't take shit. He's got a lot of sass, and he loves to jump in your face.
And my characters are Todd, which is A-R-T-A-U-D, and we're both gnomes, and I was trying to examine this. Why do me and you always create the most ridiculous-looking characters? You'd think we'd want to live out some fantasy where, you know...
Yeah, there's no fantasy of mine greater than being a really short, stocky, ugly as fuck dude. And I love the idea that like we can just make ugly ass characters that everyone in the world's gonna be like, what the hell is he doing? You know, why would you do? Because everyone who creates characters in these games creates the image, they want to project the image that they wish they were. You know, they want to be big, brutish, tough. You know, have like eyes that are like, you know, big red or like black, you know, deep eyes. Whereas you and I always like make the most ridiculous beards. We always have, you know, some sort of wacky hair. Our noses are always enormous. I remember Pilby, when I had Pilby on EQ2, I was old as hell, and like I had huge ass ears. But you know what? It makes for dynamic role playing too. If you want to role play and stuff, it's really cool. I mean, we don't do it that often. A lot of times we're just saying the F word to people and running through town declaring, you know, that we're taking it over. But you know, if you want to role play, it makes for a lot more fun than being like, oh, I'm super badass, check me out. And it doesn't work for me if I'm doing that.
Yeah, so if you're looking to start a new game, or if you have World of Warcraft and you just want to hang out, and I guess we're creating a guild where we're just going to mess around. We'll do things, but we'll just mess around. It'll be relaxed. Just sign up and email us, or, you know, message us in a game or whatever, and you can be in the guild. We don't really care who you are.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, I guess we have a charter that we need a certain amount of signatures on. And
we've got like five.
Yeah, because
right now, I think I'm trying to think of what we were going to have the name. See, Casey and I wanted it to be, our clan name to be Poop, because when we used to play, it was always hyphen, equal sign, capital P, the number 0, large O, lowercase p, equal sign, hyphen, and we thought it was the funniest damn thing ever. I mean, we were kids, so we wanted to translate over, because anyone who remembers Clan Poop from Battle.net would remember Casey and I as having the most ridiculous maps, and we would always stack the odds in our favor by making these maps where he and I would be placed at mines that had just millions of dollars in gold, and everyone else would have like, you know, 40 lumber and like 20 gold that they could mine, and then they'd see these griffin-riding army or like a huge-ass navy coming after them, and then they would immediately quit the game, which was detrimental to their score anyway, and then we'd just dominate.
You're just challenging them. That's all you were doing.
Well, yeah.
You're making rise to the occasion like Teen Wolf.
Exactly. We used to make people, like, we'd be like, you want to try out for Clan Poop? And they'd be like, of course, because we were super sweet. Map, and we would just make the odds go way against them, and then after a while they'd just be like, fuck. We'd be like, you know what, if you can't hack it, you're part of the clan. So, And the best map was this one I designed called Lake Christ, because I was just doodling the map, and then in the middle of it, I decided to draw a lake and a few islands in it, and it oddly looked just like Jesus Christ. And so we would, that was like a map in the world to do. So anyway.
Okay, yeah, so if you want to join up in World of Warcraft, by all means do so, since we need mm-hmm. the people. And I wanted to end the show with just one little call. I'm trying to make a new intro for the show that would be, just a bunch of different clips from the actual show. You know, so when people fire up the program, they sort of give a taste of what the show is going to be like, so they don't immediately delete it like I'm sure they have been. And, so if you have any specific favorite moments, email them to thisjustin@the-means.com. And if you can, try to name the date of the podcast, and even better, the time that whatever you liked was said, and then maybe we can put it on in the intro.
Yeah, the minute and second.
Yeah. And that's about all we have for this week, so...
Yeah, I think that's everything for this week. I want to remind people that coming up soon, we've been doing our reading periods, and so if you've got stuff to submit, you can digitally send it over to submissions@the-means.com, and then we'll get it, and we'll start, we've been reading through, we've gotten some good submissions so far, a few acceptances already for issue two, so congratulations to those people, and... you just send those in, and if you have artwork, send that in too. Actually, you know what? You usually do this at the end of the podcast, don't you?
Well, I do.
I'm stealing your... Sorry, I didn't... another quick reminder. My band just finished up in the studio, so if anyone liked some of the songs that they heard at the end, we've just got a few more things. We're going to have the CD available in the next couple weeks, and we'll feature it on the podcast, I'm sure, with some of the new stuff. But if you're interested, just keep listening, and I'll tell you when we're coming out with the stuff. And if you're ever in Michigan, and if we start touring out, just come see us, because we'd like to. And just say hi and say that you read the means, and then I'll promptly punch you in the face. Because I'll be drunk. I add that in. I'm usually drunk.
All right, that's all we have for this week, so see you next Monday.
Bye, guys.
You have just finished listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, January 15th, 2006, and distributed on Monday, January 16th, 2006. For more information, please visit www.the-means.com. See you in World of Warcraft.